focusing your attention within the heart and feeling there a divine peace, a joy, a love. The kind of peace and joy and love that surpasses worldly expectation, that is, it's not contingent upon your circumstances, either you gaining or losing anything. It just simply is. It always has been, and it always will be. This is your eternal gift. But who receives it? Who opens their hearts? This is the moment to open your heart now, to receive that gift, to feel that peace, that joy, that love dwelling deep within your heart, not pushing it away, not putting it away, not keeping distance from it, but rather knowing that the virtues of the heart are with you always. All you need do is open and receive. Will you pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master, Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. The most recent Vision magazine, there's a homage to Pujya Swami Satchidanandaji Maharaj. On the 12th October 2008, at 8:10 p.m., our beloved Swami Satchidanandaji cast off his physical body through which he was serving humanity for 60 long years, upholding the motto of universal love and service for which his masters, beloved Papa and Pujya Mataji, established Anandashram in 1931. It was on the 26th January 1949 that Pujya Swamiji started his seva to his gurus in the ashram, and the long tapasya of service to his gurus, beloved Papa till 1963, and Pujya Mataji until 1989, looking upon everyone as form of his gurus and serving everyone with love and devotion, silently and unremittingly brought out the saint in Pujya Swamiji. After Pujya Mataji's Samadhi in 1989, the responsibility of ashram management fell on Pujya Swamiji. He became a perennial source of inspiration and guidance to the ever-increasing number of devotees. Many have expressed their feeling that what they had been getting from beloved Papa and Pujya Mataji, they were getting from Swamiji. He was also an efficient administrator, and nothing escaped his attention. The outstanding characteristic of Swamiji was his unique way of conveying practical hints effectively through his exemplary lifestyle and with minimum of words. Devotees who have had the good fortune of interacting with Swamiji, even for a brief period, would have experienced a rare warmth and affection, as if they were one with him. His benign and captivating smile would easily make one feel at home with him. His illumined face emitted grace and peace. The few soft-spoken words which would come forth would clearly and precisely convey his soothing message. To those who approached him for material help, he would give, give, and give, so readily and freely and so lovingly. What his right hand gave, the left hand would not know. To those who sought his advice and guidance on spiritual matters, he had always a clear-cut solution, explained in the simplest of terms. His surrender to his guru was total, as is evident from his repeated assertion that beloved Papa's will alone prevails. In his presence, one can learn what self-effacement is. He lived for others, worked for others, did everything for the happiness of others. He only acted, but never reacted. He only acted, but never reacted. To the sick, he was a doctor. To the brokenhearted, he infused strength and courage. To one and all, he was more than a loving mother, taking care of even their minutest requirements. To ashram workers, he poured out parental affection in abundance. He treated ashram cows on par with other inmates and was their caring vet. He was profound in all fields of knowledge. At the same time, he maintained a low profile. His childlike look, his radiating love, melted the hearts of all those who sought his guidance and made everyone feel his closeness. Although apparently immersed in the so-called administrative activities, just like a chief executive of a large establishment, Swamiji remained ever cool, calm, and unruffled in all conditions and circumstances. He was always reveling in bliss. Pujya Swamiji not only preserved and carried forward beloved Papa Mataji's glorious tradition of universal love and service, which remains the bedrock of Anandashram, the abode of bliss, but also added on to it by helping the setting up and running of various temples of service for the welfare of mentally challenged children, orphans, aged, destitute, etc. As everyone knows, Swamiji, after the stroke he had in 2004, had not recovered from its effects. Though now and then there were signs of some slight improvement, there was not much change in his condition, and things started worsening from the month of July 2008. The pain caused by the failure of multiple organs was severest, but Swamiji, as has been his wont, bore everything stoically. Swamiji was an epitome of endurance and patience. On the 12th October, around 5:30 p.m., Swamiji's blood pressure dropped drastically. His condition gradually declined. He was almost in a coma. All physical ailments seemed to have gone to rest, and finally, at 8:10 p.m., the body became still. About an hour later, Swamiji's physical frame was shifted to the centenary hall to enable devotees to pay their last respects. And a little later, it was placed in a refrigerated glass box. There was a continuous flow of devotees and the general public right up to the midnight, and again from the next morning until 3 p.m. People from all walks of life, including leaders of different religions, commercial establishments, social and political organizations, poured in to pay homage to Pujya Swamiji, whose love, kindness, and compassion had touched their hearts at some time or the other in the last 60 years. Thereafter, the body was taken to the Bhajan Hall and kept there up to 5:45 p.m. Right from 5 p.m. on the 12th, devotees were chanting Ram Nam continuously. At 4:45 p.m. on the 13th, the body was carried amidst the chorus of Ram Nam to the cremation site, between the Samadhi Mandirs of Beloved Papa and Pujya Mataji, and on the northern side of the pathway between the two. The body was placed on a suitably prepared platform, and around 5:30 p.m. the pyre was lit by Swami Muktanandaji with full-throated Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram renting the air. In the presence of a vast multitude of devotees and local population. Just as the fire god had done his work around 9 p.m., there is a heavy downpour for about half an hour, as if to cool off everything, and all was quiet. May beloved Papa, Mataji, Pujya Swamiji bless and guide us all to walk on the path shown by them, to uphold the true spirit of universal love and service, and to strive towards attaining the supreme purpose of life. I'll read on here. This is Pujya Swamiji Satchinandaji's letter. Reproduced below is a letter, Pujya Swami Satchinandaji, written on the 1st February 2003. To all inmates of Anandashram and all bhaktas visiting the ashram. Beloved children of beloved Purushottama, Papa and Mataji. This is written just to express my deep gratitude to you all and all friends for all the love you have showered on me and the cooperation you have extended to me during my long stay in Anandashram, engaged in the service of beloved Papa and Mataji. I sincerely feel that all of you gave me so much love and reverence, and that it made me wonder if I deserved so much. I then passed them on to him who really deserved it. It was he, seated in my heart, who gave me a little of his love, which enabled me to pass it on to you all. Pass it on to you means pass it on to him who is seated in your hearts. So it came from him alone and went back to him in innumerable forms. So he made it possible for me to swim in the ocean of love, pure and unadulterated love, and serve beloved Papa and Mataji and his innumerable forms of devotees and those visiting the ashram. Now that beloved Papa has used this body as his instrument for the last 53 years, he has brought about the external conditions in such a way as to make this body withdraw from activities. Beloved Papa has found other suitable instruments to take care of the different types of seva in the ashram, making it easy for me to face the change and accept it cheerfully. All those engaged in beloved Papa's seva were told that, by the will of beloved Papa, they have all come here with aspiration to get the highest realization of God. They have to keep this goal before them and undauntedly work for it. Become more serious in sadhana, your spiritual practice. Develop more harmony and mutual understanding among all, and settle minor differences by talking about them then and there, lest the differences and impressions caused by them should get accumulated and explode one day. All should keep this goal before them and make sure that whatever they say or do must be helpful for spiritual progress. Petty likes and dislikes should be sacrificed for the sake of this higher common ideal. If all of you work harmoniously and lovingly, serve everybody visiting the ashram, looking upon them as different forms of a beloved Papa, Papa will surely bless you, lead you on the path, and ultimately make you merge in the Saswat Swarup of beloved Papa. So my humble request is that all those who have contact with Papa, and especially those who are engaged in service of beloved Papa, should make the best of the opportunities Papa has so graciously given us for attaining the supreme goal of human life, resulting in perfect liberation from the cycle of birth and death. Making the best use of the opportunity means, 1. Living the life with the only aspiration for realizing God. 2. Doing, talking, and thinking only that which will keep up the spiritual progress and shunning that which will not. 3. Loving everybody without any reservation, irrespective of relationship or friendship, caste, creed, nationality, etc. 4. be a model to others, to show what a devotee, a beloved Papa, should be. 5. Accepting and revering all saints as other forms of our own Guru. 6. Feeling that we do not belong to any particular sect. We are all only devotees of the Lord, awakened and guided by our Guru, beloved Papa. Some other devotees may be getting guidance from other saints. Thus, whoever may be our Guru, we are all children of God and devotees of God, and therefore brothers and sisters. Guru and God are not different. The same God whom you want to realize has come to us in the form of beloved Papa to guide us. So also God has come in different forms, other saints, to awaken and guide a certain other section of society. 7. Living in the world in perfect detachment. If your destiny makes you possess many things, possess them as a trustee of God, and not be possessed by them. When the things, even if they are precious, are taken away from us, there is no need to feel sorry in parting with them. God brought them to us to keep them for some time, and now He has taken them away. So part with them as cheerfully as we receive them. 8. Living in perfect surrender to His will. Being fully conscious that whatever happens through anybody happens by His will only, and no individual is really responsible for any action, though man may claim the doership. The real doer is God. God as Prakriti is the doer, and God as Purusha is only witness and not doing anything, though He is the power that activates Prakriti. 9. Humility. This is the greatest virtue. Try to be the humblest. Feel all others you see are greater than what you are. Never assert yourself and boss over others. Even if your viewpoint is correct, this can be put before others in a humble way, and thus can win over others. Even if what you think is correct, if what others think is not wrong or detrimental to the institution, why not accept others' opinions and wholeheartedly cooperate in working out the same? 10. Say or do anything if it is helpful in maintaining the solidarity of the ashram, and thus help our own progress. Shun anything that will not, however attractive or tempting they are. Sacrifice anything and everything for the harmony and solidarity of the ashram. Consider ashram interests a more important than personal interest. And 11. Do not hesitate to take strong action against those who steal, tell lies for the sake of harming others, insult or molest women, engage themselves in activities detrimental to the ashram, come to the ashram in a drunken state. Do not forget that people come to the ashram to gain peace of mind, so it is the duty of everyone in the ashram to deal with them in such a way that they find their troubled minds calm down here, and they gain a certain measure of peace. Even if the visitors or other members behave a little rudely, or very rudely, it is for us to remain cool and deal with them all, with all love. This will change the other person also. There is no other way to calm down one who has lost his or her temper. Love conquers hate. Give love for hate. Then hate will be conquered. When we are earnest in our quest and serious in our sadhana, we can be sure we will get guidance from within and also from without to do the right thing at the right time. Guidance will be like this: from within, strong prompting to do something or not do something. From without, external conditions will shape in such a way as to show us that they coincide with the prompting from within. If these, our outside and inside, coincide, we can be sure it is God's guidance. Our character, our thought and action also will gradually get transformed from the human to the divine. May beloved Papa and Mataji bless you all with such intense aspiration and such sincerity and enthusiasm in sadhana that your progress in sadhana is fast and seva you do is perfect, and help your sadhana, or rather become sadhana itself, and lead you to the ultimate goal resulting in eternal happiness. Deepest love, best wishes, and pranams to all of you, the immortal child of the immortal beloved Papa and Mataji. Ever yours, Satchidananda. Beautiful. It's very nice that on the inside page are a series of pictures, and in the center is Swamiji and Mother pictured together there. Real leadership is something that is actually a rare commodity in this world. We are all born into this world alone, and we all leave this world ultimately alone. And therefore, real leadership begins with the individual. When you begin to focus on your own life in a thoughtful, retrospective kind of way, and you think about your life with a deep concentration. What is the purpose of your life? Why are you here? Is it only to satisfy the senses? Is it only to gain a little ego aggrandizement? Is it only to avoid pain and obtain some pleasure? These are the goals, frankly, that most people are guided by. And so we have to reflect even more deeply. Now, great spiritual masters come into this world in order to give us something of a hint at what is possible. If we did not have the examples of truly realized masters, and granted there are many who have paraded who are far less than this exalted goal, despite what they may claim for themselves, nevertheless, there are true spiritual masters who have visited this world, who have been wayshowers for the rest of us, that we might be able to see with our own eyes, to feel within our own hearts the influence of these great spiritual masters. I feel very blessed that I have had the influence in my life of my own guru, Mother Hamilton, but also of Swami Satchidananda, who I consider, up until his recent passing, the greatest living spiritual master on the earth today. He lived in humility. This is absolutely a fact. There is no doubt about it. When he would sit, and all people sat facing toward him, and he would sit, and he would look up at the pictures of his masters, of Papa and Mataji, he would write on his writing board with his finger, not actually writing with a pen, but he would write out Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. He looked to them as his all and all, and he always upheld Papa as the highest and the greatest. And if you were to ever compare him with Papa, he would quickly deny that there is any similarity, that he had not attained what Papa had attained. My own view is that he had, and that this attainment had changed in recent years to becoming more and more absolutely perfect in God. But I also saw that he was playing a role, because there are many who come to the ashram. It is easy to think sometimes that you can be spiritually perfected, particularly if you're feeling uplifted in divine spirit, if you're feeling God's presence within you, if you're feeling guided by that presence, you can come to believe that you have reached unto the perfection of the Guru. Swamiji wanted to hold out an example of one who is always aspiring, one that so many held in deep respect and indeed in awe. And for him to say that he had not achieved the supreme goal left it to the human mind not to anticipate the day when they might also achieve the divine goal that they would always be aspiring. Now, the value in this is a great one because there are many levels of realization as you ascend the spinal stairway of realization. At first, you are mostly human, and you have occasional touches with divine experience. And if you are sincere and wholehearted in your aspiration, you begin to feel that presence more and more. You feel an upliftment. You feel a bliss. You feel a joy within your being. Light begins to permeate you. But you also experience yourself as human. And so when you are in the human self, it feels like it drags you down like lead weights on a balloon, gradually drawing you back down to earth. And so then you have to consciously cut the cords that tie you to this material consciousness and rise up again. And so back and forth and back and forth you go, numberless times. You go through this up and down kind of motion, and that is when you are totally sincere, when you are totally dedicated. For those who do not keep up the intensity of their sadhana, gradually darkness begins to take over. And through that darkness, they begin to lose sight of the divine goal at all. They get completely re-immersed back into worldly life. And they lose all sense that there's anything more, anything larger. They may have a vague mental idea that there is, but it's no longer a consuming passion to attain to that highest divine goal. So we have to keep up the aspiration. We have to keep up total purity. I went through a time when I felt the purity of God within me. And I felt that guidance. And I felt that presence with me so much of the time. And there came a time when I made some choices, and those choices I knew were a bit risky, but as I took the choices, I felt that I was still fine with the divine presence. I still felt the presence, I still felt the guidance. And so I continued forward, taking that as a sanction for what I was doing. But gradually, I got more and more lost. And eventually, I came to my senses and I saw what I had done in the negative that had taken me back into the material consciousness. And so it was back to the drawing board, you might say, and redoubling the efforts and really learning the lesson that we cannot be cavalier, we cannot treat lightly these things as they come. Every choice that we make has a causative factor to it. That is, for whatever we do, it goes out from us and it creates an impression, it creates a vibration, it creates an effect. And that effect rebounds back to us. And so we're oftentimes dealing with all the things that we ourselves have created, our thoughts, our feelings, our actions. They all go out from us. And when they come back to us in the form of other people or situations, we get very upset with the world. We get very upset with other people. We get very upset with God, perhaps, because we feel we're being treated unfairly. We feel that the person that we're having to face is not acting correctly, and we might hold a grudge against them. The reality is that we're only facing ourselves. If we were not, that person's activity would have no lasting effect on us. It may have an effect, it's true, but then we let it go. But if it's something that you hang on to, something that you can't let go of, then it becomes something that is part of you. There's a reason why that happens. There's a resonance inside of you that that corresponds to. When you live in total and complete freedom in this world, you don't have any such effects on you. You may feel the effects of certain things. You may feel the pain. You may feel even some hurt, even some sorrow. But they quickly pass through you because they don't have anything to cling on to. If you could imagine a fire that's built in a fireplace, and that fire is kept going all the time, and eventually creosote builds up in that fireplace, and ash builds up in it, and it gets more and more and more clogged. And one day, a fire can start, a chimney fire. Now, chimney fires are very troublesome because of the flammability of all the material that's built up inside that chimney. And it can burn the entire house down. And this is the way that ego consciousness is. It doesn't let things go. It keeps accumulating things, and eventually it begins a fire, and the fire burns you. Now, you contrast that to another kind of a fire that's built out in a meadow. And as the wispy smoke rises up, a puff of breeze comes along, and away goes any kinds of effect. There is nothing. There's no buildup. There's nothing to cling on to. It just simply dissipates into the atmosphere and back into the earth. And so with all of us, if we are to live free, if we are to live true, then this is the way that we must be in this world, is not allow anything to cling to us. Now this is real leadership, because you are showing through your own life, through your own activity, how to live, the best way to live, how to gain freedom, and how to live in that freedom. Swami Satchidananda was certainly that kind of leader. He was the kind of person that if you had gone to the ashram in earlier years when Mother did, that Swamiji might be just the person who would carry your luggage to your room, help you get yourself situated. He would do any and all chores as required. He served humbly. He never thought of putting himself forward in that sense. And perhaps he was the most surprised when he became the head of the ashram. And when it says he paid attention to every detail, it's absolutely true. When Larry first went to the ashram, they would bring the rice before Swamiji, samples of it, and he would choose from those samples. He kept an eye on absolutely every single thing that went on in that ashram. One time I asked Swamiji, I said, because I didn't see that there were any, they had over 100 workers, the paid workers there. That didn't include the ashram inmates. And I said, Swamiji, what kind of organization do you have? Who gives the orders? And he said, well, no one. Everyone just knows what to do. And, I think I saw on a few occasions, and because it was spoken in a language that I didn't understand, that I think he was upbraiding a worker here and there for maybe some slackness. And as Swamiji said in the end here of his writing, that if somebody were to go against some very basic kinds of rules, that they were imbibing alcohol and getting drunk on a regular basis, if they're gambling, if there's any kind of problems that way, they would be asked not to come back. You did have to act properly, because it is a place of peace, an abode of bliss. And if you don't protect any kind of a place like that, whether it be your own home or whether it be an ashram, if you don't have some protection against some of the darker forces in this world, then those darker forces can come in and, like a cancer, they can take over. And pretty soon, you don't have anything left. It's all eaten away. And so sometimes you have to make hard choices. Sometimes we think of going to an ashram as, you know, a bit of a vacation or taking it easy. And those people who work there must just have the most lovely experiences all the time. And everyone is a charm to deal with. But I can tell you that they have dealt with absolutely everything. I was asked to help with a young woman there who had a mental breakdown while she was there. And they have to deal with this kind of thing. They have to deal with people who act improperly. I saw one point, the closest thing I saw Swamiji to getting angry, and it was a Westerner there who had formed an attachment with the young woman. They are obviously attracted to each other. And so they started spending time out outside the ashram, sometimes at night, going on long walks. And this is something that's not to be done. You're there to focus on God. And so Swamiji was speaking to him in rather strong terms and actually asked him to leave. And he showed his imbalance by, in town, when she was leaving on the bus, he ended up chasing her down the street and they had a long argument. And one of the shop owners who was attached to the ashram there was concerned about it because this affected the reputation of the ashram itself. And so these kinds of things are important, to conduct ourselves, to get the basic do's and don'ts down correctly. Because without that as a solid foundation, nothing else can truly be built. It will always be built upon stilts that are wobbly and can be broken and can be taken away at any time. We have to look for any kind of leadership, whether it's individual or in larger spheres. We have to look that we build our lives upon a solid foundation. And that means putting God first. Because when you put God first, you really begin to seek out what is that wisdom, that internally, intuitionally derived wisdom. When you ask God something and you put something before God, you have to have a quiet mind to start with. If your mind is not quiet, you cannot listen to that still, small voice. There is no way you can hear it. Now, sometimes God overrides all the confusion and all the turmoil we put ourselves in. But if we're going to make a habit of guiding our lives through this intuitional wisdom, we have to first learn how to still the mind. Without that, nothing else can come. When you then get that intuition, that inner guidance, then you have to follow it. If you ask for the wisdom, if you ask for the message, and then you choose just to put it away, you have just put a brick wall between you and that divine knowing. And that cannot be taken down until you have rectified the situation. You see how far we get from abiding by that internal guidance, by that internal guidance. This is all important. And when we receive that internal guidance, even if it were to destroy what we think of as our lives today, we would have to follow it. We have to. Because contained within that inner guidance is what is for the highest good of everybody concerned. But first, we have to still the mind. So these are the foundation stones upon which we build real leadership. Then we are able to speak out loud more and more what truth we have within us. It naturally comes out, not in a domineering, dominating kind of a way. Rarely do we win over people when we do it in this kind of way. Some people may kowtow to us, but they're not true adherents. Because they haven't really chosen of their own free will. They feel browbeaten into it. And so we learn to speak the truth. I hear oftentimes, and it's common today to hear, I had to confront that person. And I really don't think that this is really what's at issue. What's really at issue is, do we speak our truth? Do we speak our truth? We don't have to confront somebody in order to speak our truth, but sometimes we may anticipate that it'll go against what the other person thinks or what they value. And so it can turn in, so to speak, to a confrontation. But that's not our intention. That's not how we start out. If in your life you determine to always speak the truth, this will take you a great deal toward your goal. It's not so easy, is it? There are so many ways that we want to guard ourselves. There are so many ways that we want to cut short our exposure to other people's ridicule, to their opinions, to what they think. There once was a father and a son who were walking down the street and they had a mule with them. And so the father, out of a bit of kindness, he takes his son and he boosts him up onto the mule seat. And so he's riding along there. And suddenly somebody who's passing by says, "Hey boy, don't you show any respect for your father? He should be riding the mule and you should be walking." Well, the boy was embarrassed and he got down from the mule and insisted that the father get up on the mule. And so they continued on for a while. And then another passerby said, "Old man, why are you riding and your young boy, who's obviously tired there, he's having to keep walking? Why aren't you a kind father and letting your son ride on the mule?" Wow, the father felt very embarrassed by this, so he got down off of the mule and he put the boy back up. Well, this went back and forth for a period of time, and it really created quite a consternation for both of them. They just simply didn't know what to do. So finally, they were walking over a bridge, and they were both so disgusted with the whole thing that they took the mule and they threw it over the bridge. And this is what we can do, isn't it, when we get overly concerned about what other people think, about how other people feel. I have one boss in this world, and that is God. And if I find favor with that boss, then I'm all right. Master used to say that he would rather be with God even if the entire world were against him. Can you imagine such a thing? That's a stiff test, isn't it? Most of us are sensitive to what other people think, what they feel, what they want. And naturally, we want to please them. But who is your boss? Where do you get your leadership from? And when your leadership comes from everybody's opinion, and you try to find favor with anybody that you're with, you're going to be on constantly shifting ground. Not only that, but people's opinions shift and they change. So you think that you've just pleased somebody and then they go and change their mind. Now you have to shift your position in order to get in line with them again. It's a hopeless case. And eventually you become so confused, you don't know what your mind is, you don't know what other people's minds are. And so you'd rather just have the earth open up and just drop you right into it. There's a great challenge in here. And that is for us to stand up straight and know who we are in divine consciousness. That we have a right, we have as much right as any other person to breathe, to think, to feel, to want. We have as much right, not more, but as much. We have a right to take up space. This is our individuality that has been granted to us by the divine consciousness. We don't have to apologize for our existence. We don't have to apologize for breathing too much air or taking too much space. When you deny the fact that you have a right to be here, you are denying God within you. Now, this is not an egotistical thing. This is just simply a fact. And if you deny God within you, then you are in very bad trouble indeed. So it is time for us to stand up straight. It is time to hold ourselves accountable. It is time for us to, first of all, find that internal leadership to allow God to lead us. And then for us to become leaders in this world through our example. Through our example. And when God puts us into a position of leadership, to step into that position of leadership, not out of arrogance, not out of egotisticity, but rather because that's just simply the role that God has assigned us. And tomorrow He may assign us a different role, and we may be a follower tomorrow. And really, it makes no difference. As long as we're doing what divine will chooses us to do. This is the only thing in the world that matters. This is the only thing that really counts. Krishna says you can be the most successful person in the entire world, but if you are not right with your true self, if you are not right with God, you are a miserable failure. And on the other hand, from the world's viewpoint, you may be a terrific failure. An A1 failure. Nobody's ever failed as well as you have in this world. But if you're right with God and the Spirit within you, then you are perfect right in this moment. But look at how we judge things. Look at how we judge ourselves, how we judge other people. We're always in such a business of judging other people, but you know what? 99% of the time, no judgment is required. If you're going to go into business with someone, if you're going to make a commitment to someone, certainly we need to show judgment. But so often the brain is just rattling along with all kinds. Oh, I like this. I don't like that. Look at that person there. And usually it's in the negative. Just try turning that off for a while. Just enjoy the world as God. That it is God who has manifested himself as this world, as all the different forms in this world. Just enjoy it. Watch the play. Why be in such a constant state of judgment? Because when you judge others, it will surely turn back upon you in the form of very harsh judgment. When you know somebody who hands out very harsh judgments to other people, you can be guaranteed that at some point, in some place, all of those weapons of judgment get turned right back within on that person. And you can feel compassion for them because you know what a vicious thing that is. Now, that doesn't excuse behavior, but it gives you some understanding that that individual is living with that. And it's a tough thing to live with. But why live with that? Deep within you is the abiding spirit, is God. Purity, like a gem that shines. And through all the darkness, through all the mud layer coverings you may have upon it, it shines still. It cannot not shine. The only question is, can you receive it? Can you receive that light, that luster? Can you receive that love? Can you receive that joy? Can you receive that peace? Because those are your eternal gifts. So let us show real leadership by first following the divine guide. And then by fearlessly setting out in this world and letting your light shine for all to see. You don't need to knock on doors. You don't need to get other people to see the world just exactly the way you see it. You simply need to turn your mind within. Find God there and then let that light shine out for all to love, for all to see. And surely God will draw you unto himself. And you will feel that divine presence now and always. If you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Bliss.